Welcome to the Pre-Post Film Review. I'm John Asquith.
And I'm Matt Stevenson. So this episode is a little bonus episode for you guys. John has been attending the Melbourne International Film Festival, or MIFF, and has seen a few films. So we thought we'd chat down, as we do each year, and sit down and have a chat about what John managed to see. So, John, do you want to run us through the films that you saw and give us some sort of brief impressions about what you thought and perhaps which were your favourites?
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Let's do that. Exactly what you said. I'm going to go through these in just the order that I saw them, just so, I mean, that's not relevant to anyone, but just felt like I needed to share that. So they're not in order of like favourite or anything like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Got to prepare the voice for this one. So the first movie I saw, Matt, was one, I should say off the top to people listening, that we'll try and keep this relatively succinct and brief and, you know, not waffle on too much about movies that are hard to see or people won't get a chance to see. Always very mindful of that. Okay, so the first movie I saw is one I think most people are going to get a chance to see, and that is called Ingrid Goes West. And this stars Aubrey Plaza of Parks and Rec fame, probably most notably. And she's been in a bunch of indie films and mainstream films before. This is a kind of dark comedy about a girl who is obsessed with social media, and in particular Instagram, and has a sort of the ultimate FOMO, I guess, fear of missing out. And she lives quite a sad life and sees people online living, you know, people post on social media the best side of themselves and feels like she needs to live like that. So she finds someone in LA who's one of these sort of Instagram stars, starts following her, and moves to LA to get close to her and tries to be friends with her and sort of does a bunch of dodgy things to weasel her way into her life. And it's freaking, it's one of the highlights of the festival. It's cool. A really, really good movie. It's really funny and it's incredibly depressing as well. in the sense of this character is sad, but also what it says about social media and our obsession with it, and how people just live their lives, through their phones, and it's not a real representation at all of who they actually are. And there's some great satire in this, and I think it does it without being really obvious as well. Like, social media is bad. It's over the top in terms of some of the comedy, but it's also very subtle and sort of explores the good and bad sides, I would say.
Right.
Mostly the bad sides, but but it does it in an interesting, thoughtful way, I think. I really would very highly recommend everyone go and see this. I'm thinking it will probably get quite a wide release.
Cool.
Sometime soon. So, yeah, big thumbs up for Ingrid Goes West.
Is it made by anyone notable? Do you know? Like,
that's a good question. The director is Matt Spicer. And I don't know who that is.
No, it doesn't ring a bell for me either.
He does a very good job with this. And it's funny, actually, when I saw it with my wife, and we're both sort of taking... Our New Year's resolution last year was to take a break from social media, which we've managed to uphold so far. And we were sort of laughing at... This movie has quite a powerful ending, and as soon as the lights went up in the cinema, everyone just turned their phone on and were immediately like typing and I guess sending shit off to Twitter and Instagram and all this stuff, and we were just like, no one even paid full attention to what this movie is saying. It made us quite angry, actually, just looking at everyone like, what are you, wait, just wait 10 minutes and absorb what the movie's telling you.
That's hilarious.
Anyway. So, that's definitely a highlight.
Yeah, that sounds great.
And I'd be very, very keen to hear what you think of that one, Matt. I'm sure you'll get a chance to see it.
Yeah, I think
soon.
So.
Okay, so after that, I saw a sci-fi mystery horror-ish movie called The Endless.
Oh, this one sounded good. I was intrigued by this film.
Yes. Yeah, it did sound very good. And there's clearly a lot of passion put into it. It was quite low budget, although they tried to being a sci-fi-ish film at times. They really tried to make it quite big in scope at times. Anyway, this is all my way of saying that they tried really hard, but this was a real stinker for me, hate to say. It starts off, Matt, the movie starts off with this like quote that comes up from Lovecraft about fear of the unknown. And I was like, oh yes, here we go. This is going to be like The Witch or something. This is going to be like the highlight of Myth.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was disappointing. And it's one of those movies where within the first 10 minutes, I kind of knew that I wasn't going to like it. I could just from the filmmaking and the acting and where it was, you know how you can sort of instantly tell sometimes.
Yeah.
So anyway, the story of this is two brothers that escaped a cult when they were young and can't find their place in society. So they sort of go back just to visit. One of the brothers is more keen to go back than the other. And so the more hesitant one's like, fine, we'll go back for like a weekend and I'll show you how messed up it was. But while they're there, they sort of get sucked back in. And the cult sort of worships this sort of Cthulhu-like creature without ever obviously stating that, and we never see it. I guess this is kind of spoilers, although that you find all that out within the first 20 minutes, and then there's a bunch of other stuff that happens.
Right.
Now, as I said, the ambition and the passion is there. It just doesn't come together very well, and it really felt to me like something I would have made in my first year of uni, or like it felt very amateur. And looking up the directors, who are the two guys that star in it, they've met. This is like their third feature, which makes it more disappointing that they haven't. It still felt like very student filmy, and I don't think they're that young. I think they're probably like, you know, mid 30s or something like that. I mean, right. I really admire them for doing it, but I can't help but yes, I say that I was disappointed by this one.
Did it have any, like, at least good moments or good creepy imagery at all? Or was it a bit of a bust the whole way?
The imagery, as I was sort of hinting earlier, the imagery suffers from the budget.
Right.
Whenever they... And they're not particularly clever with having a low budget. Instead of hiding things, they'll just show it, but with bad CGI.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
It's a shame.
With the exception of one scene, which I feel like I can describe because it's not a spoiler, that the cult has this sort of game that they play at night time where they play tug of war. They've got this giant rope that goes off into the woods, and what you do is you tug on it and it resists, and then if you can manage to pull it sort of loose, then you're like free of your, you know, burdens or something like that.
Right.
And there's a great moment where this guy's pulling on it and he gets pulled back towards the woods, except the rope goes up like to the top of the trees really quickly, as if there's some huge thing in there just like tugging on it. And it's very darkly shot. All you can see is the rope going into the darkness, basically. And that was a very, very effective...
That sounds cool.
...scene. Yeah, that was... I wish there was more of that kind of stuff. Mm. But yeah, unfortunately, not great. So, let's move on, folks. Yeah,
what's next?
If you're still there. I hope so. Doing my best here. Next is a movie called Japanese Girls Never Die. This is a Japanese film, funnily enough. It's sort of a Pulp Fiction-esque in terms of structure, of three different stories that slowly interloop, and you're sort of jumping between time periods a lot. So that was interesting. The structure was interesting. Unfortunately, this was another sort of disappointment for me. The story deals with a bunch of... Sort of each story is about a girl living in Japan and dealing with sexism, and sort of a male-dominated society, which Japan you know, still has quite a lot of that sort of dynamic going on. It's perhaps not as progressive as other countries. So I was really looking forward to seeing how they'd explore that, but it felt very superficial and still very male gazey. So, you know, as though it was doing feminist themes on a surface level, but then there's a shot where this girl is going shopping and it the camera is like upskirting basically on her ass.
Jesus.
And at first I thought, oh, maybe this is like a commentary on that, but then as the movie went on I was like, I don't think it was. I think it's just, you know, a bit of a pervy thing. So bizarre. There were good moments in it, and it starts off quite low key and almost like a Japanese version of Girls at times, I think, with these kind of like alternative losery misfits in society that sort of come together. But it quickly goes off the rails and becomes really slapstick at times, and the stories don't interlock in a coherent way. Like the jigsaw puzzle is just confusing of how the story fits together. So yeah, unfortunately, another disappointment.
That's a shame.
Like, I wouldn't even recommend bothering to see this out of curiosity. Whereas, say, something like The Endless, which I was just talking about, I kind of want you to see, Matt, just to get your opinion on it.
It sounds like there's at least ambition, and it comes from a good place.
Exactly.
Even if it's not successful. Whereas this sounds like it fails pretty spectacularly at what it's trying to do. If it's...
Yeah. I think so.
Or it's very muddled, at least, you know.
It's muddled, yeah. I mean, it's not like there's shots of, I don't know, girls in bikinis like, and you're leering at them. But that shot was troubling to me, and unless it was some big thing that I was missing, some intentional thing. It was just... And it was really long. This movie was long. You know, I guess in that typical kind of indie film way of just like cuts, you can cut out half of this stuff.
Yeah, fair enough. So you had two stinkers back to back.
Two stinkers back to back. That was a stinky day. So let's move on here, Matt.
Yeah, what did you follow that up with? Was there something more positive?
I got something a little more positive this time. This is a movie called Ikari XB1. And this is a 1963 sci-fi film.
Oh, yeah. I forgot you were going to see some of these classic films.
Yeah. So MIFF this year had a cool little sci-fi retrospective showing some old, lesser-known but influential sci-fi films. And this was one that I managed to catch. And this is basically the blueprint for Alien.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's
interesting.
It's Alien and Sunshine. It's like if you mixed those two movies together.
Man, that sounds amazing. I want to see this
in the 1960s. This is what the movie that you'd get. So obviously, it's not quite as dare I say interesting as Sunshine and Alien, because they're a little more modern in their approach. This is obviously early 60s. Did I say 1963? So it's still finding its feet really in terms of sci-fi filmmaking. Obviously sci-fi filmmaking has been around for a long time, but this is like a big, fairly big budget for the time, I think, film. So basically the premise, why I say it's like Alien or Sunshine is, this is the ship that's left Earth, to colonize another planet. Basically, they're going to be the first ones to go to this planet that they've predetermined the destination, and they think there's going to be life there. So the whole movie, minor spoilers here, it pretty much takes place on the ship, on the journey, and it's just the problems that they encounter on the way and the dynamics between the characters on the ship. So there's a lot of that, as I say, Alien and Sunshine, of just the characters on the ship sorting out problems that come up along the way. And sometimes they have to go out and do repairs because, you know, something knocks the side of the ship. There's another point later on where something fairly big happens that reminded me a lot of Sunshine, with perhaps one of the characters going a bit loopy.
Right.
Without saying any more, which is, I mean, it's very much a blueprint for Sunshine.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I think of all the movies I've mentioned. But yeah, I really, really enjoyed this. I love watching older films and seeing how they laid the seeds for things that came after. And this is definitely one of those instances. It's really well shot for its time. The effects are, you know, extremely dodgy, but it's charming. Yeah. In that sort of old, you know, B movie. I mean, it's a B sci-fi movie, but it has sort of A-level thematic stuff, I would say, which is like, you know, some of the best kind of sci-fi there is. So I really, really like this. There's one... The alien aspect is... There's one moment where they leave their ship to board another one. It just reminded me of that tension that you have in Alien when they go down to the planet. And some weird stuff happens again without giving
too even, much. That even sounds like Sunshine as well, like when they board the second ship. Like,
exactly, It's much more closer to Sunshine than Alien, but there were seeds of of Alien in there for sure.
So is it like is it a suspense film, a horror film, or is it more of a drama? Like what's the tone?
It's more of a drama, I would say. There's elements of suspense, but not in a supernatural sense, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're looking for alien life, but it never fully goes over into science fiction in the terms of aliens and that sort of thing. It's about the journey and how the characters interact with each other, and they, you know, talk about what it means to be human and why are we going to colonize the planet and what does it mean and all that sort of thing. Cool. So it's more of a drama with some suspense sort of peppered throughout and you know, there's some genuine laughs in it too. You know, as I keep saying, it really is about the characters, and they have a good sort of back and forth a lot of the time. It was... I mean, I'd never heard of this movie before.
I've not either.
But I was so glad that I had seen it, and I would check. I would urge anyone listening, and you, Matt, to, check it out.
Definitely. I'm going to... As soon as we finish this episode, I'm going to Google it and see where I can rent a copy or, you know, buy a copy, because that sounds amazing.
Yeah. It's really, really good. I mean, you know, of course, in the sense of watching an older film, you have to be in the right mindset.
Yeah.
But, no.
That was awesome.
That was a good one.
So what was next? What did you follow that one up with?
All right. What did I follow it up with? Another old sci-fi movie, cool. Matt.
Awesome.
And this one was called The Face of Another. And, it was made in 1966. This is a Japanese sci-fi film.
Right. Was the, sorry, the film we were what was the name of the film we were just talking about?
That was Ikari XB1.
Was Ikari XB1 an American film?
Oh, that was a, I want to say like Czech
film. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Which was another interesting element, just because you weren't listening to American voices or British voices, you know, that it's probably a dumb thing to say, but when you have to listen to another language that you don't understand and read subtitles, it does add sort of another interesting layer to a movie like this, definitely. I think. And perhaps some of the cheesiness is lost because
that's a very good point.
You're not hearing like a hammy delivery of the line.
Yeah.
So the Face of Another was really good as well. I really enjoyed this. As I said, an older Japanese film. The director of this, Matt, was also the director of, I want to say, Woman in the Dunes.
Oh, really? Yeah, I love that film. You saw
recently. Yes. Yeah.
Wow, great.
And this is considered to be another one of his, you know, masterpieces or something. This is the basic concept for this movie is there's a guy that has been in some kind of accident. You don't know what. His face is deformed. And so he undergoes a new radical treatment to... like wear a mask basically that looks really realistic. And by wearing the mask, he feels like he can become someone else, and he starts sort of violating societal norms because, you know, it's that there's a lot of philosophical talk in this movie about who are you really, and if your identity was lost, what would you do? Like, are we only polite to each other because people can see us, and so therefore we're kind of held accountable?
Interesting.
So yeah, there is a lot. I think it's long. It's a really long movie, and there are just scenes of him and his doctor just sitting around talking about how society is just based on masks, if you actually think about it, all this sort of thing. Right. So, you know, there's a lot of that, philosophizing, yeah. I guess you'd say. But it all comes together really well, and has quite a creepy, satisfying conclusion, without giving anything away. There's some striking imagery in this, and occasionally some very surreal imagery that is never fully explained, which is always, you know, something I think that you and me appreciate a lot, Matt, when you have this sort of unsettling tone, and every now and then there's an image that doesn't really connect with anything but sort of adds emotionally to what's going on.
That sounds amazing. It sounds similar to Woman in the Dunes, actually, in many respects. I'm curious to hear what the soundtrack was like, actually, because that was one of the things that stood out in Woman in the Dunes. It had very sort of shrill horror movie strings that seemed very ahead of its time, or unique for the sort of slow, weird pace of that film. Did this have any strange score?
Yeah, it had at times a conventional score with a theme that you hear every now and then, but it also has these sort of shocking moments that did have that very much that sort of shrill, stringy, sort of weirdly ambient, harsh kind of stuff. Yeah, for sure, there was a lot of that.
Cool. I'll have to try and check this out as well. It also sounds sort of like quite timely and weirdly related to Ingrid Goes West in terms of now the anonymity of online interactions is very similar to the discussion of masks and
who you would be. Yeah, very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you weren't held accountable. Actually. No, you can definitely see that. And there is a B storyline to this movie, which follows a woman who is disfigured as well. Like, she has some burns on her face.
Mm.
But she never, I don't want to give too much away, she doesn't get treatment. She doesn't go to the doctor, and it's sort of like a contrast to like someone that just deals with it, but is extremely depressed, versus someone who decides to wear this mask. So good stuff.
Yeah,
face of another
one. Check to add to my list. I'm going to try and find a way to watch that too. Sounds great.
All right, just a few more to go here, everyone. So thanks for sticking around. And you get 3 kisses for making it this far. Well done. Next is a movie we've both seen, Matt, so we can talk about this a little bit.
Cool.
And potentially even maybe do a bonus on this, so we'll
keep it brief. Yeah.
Keep it brief. The next movie is called The Lost City of Z.
Oh, yeah.
Or Z. I guess you'd pronounce it Z.
Yep.
And this is another movie that people can see or see soon, depending on, I guess, where you are in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a fairly big indie release.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I feel like I've been talking heaps. Why don't you sort of kick off this discussion if you want to?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think in terms of the release here, I think it's come and gone in cinemas, but I'm pretty sure people, London listeners, can find it, rent it, or it may even be streaming somewhere.
Yeah. Cool.
So The Lost City of Z is the latest film by James Gray, who's done a few things that I am familiar with but haven't really seen. I think this actually might be the first of his films that I've watched. He does have a reputation of making a sort of good, classic, kind of mid to high-ish budget indie films. And after watching this, I definitely want to check out some of his other stuff, because it just has a really, really solid classic feel to it. I don't sort of know how else to describe it. So it's the story of Percy Fawcett, who sort of was an explorer that went into the Amazon looking for a lost city. Is that right? The city of Zed, I suppose.
He comes to believe that there is a lost, an ancient city, yeah, in the Amazon forest.
Exactly. And yeah, it's just...
that's a true story.
Yes, yes. It's good to mention that. I liked the fact that it was... It's kind of a film about obsession and a man that becomes obsessed with this... with the Amazon in particular, not just the city itself, but he sort of falls in love with being out in the Amazon, and it's about him sort of dividing his life between his family back home and then continuing his expeditions into the wilderness. And it was just, I think it was very smartly done, and it's kind of about obsession, but not necessarily in a negative way. And there's hints of sort of surrealism and strange things that happen. Without giving anything away, I really appreciated the ending of the film as well. It has a certain sort of ambiguity to it all. Even though it is based on a true story, it sort of manages to end on this really nice poetic note that impressed me a lot. And Charlie Hunnam was good. All the performances are great. I was really impressed with this, John. How about you? I feel like you sort of felt the same way.
Yeah. This was a big highlight of the festival for me. I really, really loved this film. As you say, the filmmaking is a big part of why I love it. It feels very classic. Mm. Classic Hollywood epic, in many ways.
Shot on 35mm too, which looks really good.
Mm. Yeah, it's a beautiful film to look at, for sure. Has a great sound design and score, actually, as well. I've been listening to the score a lot since I saw it and really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
There's something just really captivating about this movie. I think on the surface, it probably doesn't sound particularly interesting. And I can imagine perhaps some people watching it and coming away feeling maybe a little bored. But it really, really worked for me. I think that the central performance by Charlie Hunnam is really good. I think the jungle and the Amazon sort of starts to take on not quite a metaphysical sort of form, but by the end, it almost becomes like a surreal sort of thing.
Mm.
The idea of the jungle and the lost city. And I really like that sort of thing. Where, as you said, it's very ambiguous and never spells anything out. But I really enjoyed watching that, the evolution of being quite a fixed historical drama in many ways that sort of slowly the edges bleed away and it becomes, as you say, about obsession and leaves reality at certain points in a very subtle way.
Yeah.
But I really appreciated that. And I think it's the sort of movie that doesn't really get made that much anymore.
That's a very good point.
So I appreciated it and loved it.
Yeah, it's a rare treat to get a film like this, I feel like.
Mm, yeah.
Cool, so two big thumbs up. Yeah, and maybe, like you said, I feel like it is probably rich enough to delve into in a full episode, so perhaps we can do a bonus.
Yeah.
A little further down the
track. Exactly. Yeah, maybe when it comes out for streaming here, you know, we can both rewatch it and do a bonus episode or something like that.
That sounds good.
Cool. All right, three more to go, folks. Let's fly through them.
Cool.
Okay, so the next movie, actually, I saw this straight after I saw The Lost City of Zed, so I had a jungle double bill. Saw a movie called Jungle.
Appropriate.
Yeah. And this is from Greg McLean of Wolf Creek fame, Aussie director.
Mm-hmm.
And this stars Daniel Radcliffe of Harry Potter fame, in case no one knew that. And this is, again, is based on a true story set in the 1980s of some backpacker friends who went off to the Amazon in search of adventure, and they end up getting lost, basically. You know, if I simplify it down, they get lost in the jungle and have to survive.
Silly boys.
Very silly boys. And this is good. This is really entertaining movie. I mean, it's pretty cheesy. Mm. It's if you liked Wolf Creek, I think you'll like this. It's the same level of kind of cheeseball, but effectiveness at times.
So it's a horror film, is that?
It's at times, yes.
Right.
I mean, there's no big monster or anything like that, or a creepo, but the jungle becomes the villain in many ways. So it's a lot of fun. I guess that's the best way to put it. And there is some really disturbing stuff in it. But in a kind of gross out, like fun horror way. I really enjoyed this. I think it helped that I saw it with a packed screening where everyone was kind of like squirming in their seats and laughing in a good way at the film. So I'd recommend this for like a group of friends or to see, you know, on like a date night or something like that, and just enjoy it. Maybe have like a couple of drinks before you go in, and it's good. It's not great, but it's a fun time at the movies, I guess.
Cool. How's Daniel Radcliffe with his beard?
Daniel Radcliffe's really good. Big beardy boy. Yeah. Like Hagrid's beard. Harry's grown up. he's really good. Yeah, he's the main character, obviously, and has to carry a lot of the movie for the second half. And does a really good job of being like kind of Tom Hanks-ish, except rather than being on an island, he's stuck in the jungle and, you know, goes a bit nuts and everything. So, he's good. I really like Daniel Radcliffe's choice of movies post Harry Potter. He's sort of choosing, you know, interesting roles that aren't necessarily what you'd expect from him to go on to after Harry Potter.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Cool.
All right, let's finish off with two animated movies, Matt.
Sweet.
All right, the first one is called Ethel and Ernest. This is a film from the UK. That's where you live.
That's correct.
And it's in English, which we both speak. This is a really, really charming movie. One of the highlights of the festival, without a doubt, for me. It's a 2D feature, which is just great to see a 2D animated feature on the big screen. I don't see enough of that these days. And it's just incredibly, incredibly charming. Perhaps nostalgic. I can see some criticisms being perhaps too nostalgic, but it got me hook, line, and sinker. So the story is basically you're just following a couple who meet in the 1930s and live through the 1940s and 50s and 60s. You just watch them grow old together as a couple. And it's just incredibly sweet. There's moments of tension and there's dramatic moments, but nothing particularly huge happens. They just happen to live in an interesting time where there's World War II with London being bombed, and then you get the 50s and the 60s with like a hippie movement coming on, and then a man on the moon and things like that, and you realize that generation lived through so much. And I couldn't help but think of my grandparents when I was watching this movie, which no doubt added to the sort of emotional effect that it had on me. I can't recommend this highly enough. I think, you know, if it's like a rainy night and you want to like stay in and like heat up some popcorn and watch a sweet movie, this is definitely the one to watch. You will cry many tears throughout it, for sure.
That sounds great. I'm glad you like this and got to see. I haven't seen it myself, and it was kind of one that I knew about but didn't really pique my interest. I guess I don't think it got a very small release. I think it was actually made for TV. So it aired instead of going to cinemas. I think there might have been a few select small screenings here. So it kind of just was a little blip and disappeared. And perhaps just the TV nature of it made me sort of not pay much attention to it. But I think I'm going to give it a shot now because it sounds really good.
Yeah, it's really great. My wife described it as if you took the first 10 minutes of Up and made it into a feature-length film. That's kind of what this is.
That sounds great. Awesome.
Okay, so the last movie I saw in another weird double bill was called In This Corner of the World. And it's a Japanese anime.
Mm-hmm.
And it's set during the same time period as Ethel and Ernest. Oh, really? But this is from the Japanese perspective.
Wow.
So you kind of got two sides of the war, but both of these movies just focus on the everyday life of the average person who was living during that time. So I loved the fact that I could see both of these movies. This is a great thing about, I guess, going to a festival and sort of accidentally exposing yourself to these like weird, like thematic linking things that you'd never sort of come across if you were just watching them at home.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say though, that while beautifully animated and at times funny, dramatic, and frightening, overall I was kind of disappointed by this movie. It's been getting a lot of buzz, but I found the pacing to be really weird, really off. Just on a script level, you'd have something funny happening around the family homestead that was kind of slapsticky, and then the next scene, something horrific happens to do with war, and not in a interesting contrasty way, but in a almost like there was bad editing or something. Like things would finish too quickly and then start too quickly in another completely different tone, or it just felt off to me. I think it's based on a manga, so I don't know if they just adapted that really literally and that somehow affected the editing. I'm not sure. So I don't know. It's worth checking out, but I just wouldn't expect too much. I think because I'd just seen Ethel in Ernest and I was so emotionally invested in that, coming to this, it was a little cold and I guess just culturally as well, I have to admit, unrelatable in the sense that Japan at that time was still very traditional, and the main character is this girl that gets not sold, but basically, you know, a soldier's like, hey, I want you to be my wife, and she just has to go and do it and be a housewife. And
and
the movie doesn't particularly comment on that. It just treats it as normal, I guess, at the time it was, so that's fine. But I was expecting a bit more. I don't know, that just made it hard for me to sort of get invested, that like she kind of gets treated like shit, but it's played for laughs a lot of the time.
Yes, and, a bit weird.
You know, it's like, oh, she's so dumb, and they all laugh at her, and it's like, well, give her a break. it's you know, very well animated, and there's some really nice moments. In particular, there's a, you know, it's not a spoiler to say there's some bombs that go off in this movie, and there's one where a bomb goes off, and the movie gets really stylized to deal with like the way this character becomes unconscious, and the line drawings get really rough, and contrast sort of flickers a lot. And so artistically it's, you know, very impressive. But story-wise it left me sort of wanting a bit more.
Yeah, fair enough. Sounds interesting, but perhaps...
Yeah, it's worth checking out.
Yeah, cool. I'm more interested to see Ethel in Ernest based on your praise, but that does sound...
Yeah.
Does sound interesting.
And that's it.
Cool.
That was my MIFF.
So what overall, what were your feelings? What was the vibe of MIFF? Do you think it was a good year? What was your favourite film, interestingly, out of the ones you saw?
I think it was a good year. Yeah, I think it's always a fun thing to do, you know, to be around other people that are just like totally obsessed with movies and are generally really respectful in the cinema. They turn their freaking phones off and talk. Of course, the flip side of that is the movie scoffer, who comes out to a festival, who has to prove that they're above the movie, and they'll like murmur and scoff when they don't like something. That shit pisses me off. But in general, it's a festival, you know, it's a fun atmosphere. So I think it was a good overall season, I guess you'd say. I was disappointed that I didn't get like a really good horror movie out of it.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, you normally discover something quite inventive or something that was off your radar at a festival like this. So I was disappointed I didn't get that this time around. I guess I was hoping The Endless would be that. There was enough really great films that I was satisfied. And I think, you know, the highlights were Ingrid Goes West, Lost City of Z in particular might be my favourite. And then on a purely emotional level, Ethel in Ernest was up there. And seeing some of the older films and getting some sort of historical stuff in there, some film history was really fun. So, yeah, thumbs up overall, Matt.
Awesome.
Good stuff.
That's great. And some good tips for me and our listeners as well. Some stuff for us to check out or, try and watch. Great. Good stuff.
Good stuff. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to me ramble, Matt.
Anytime, John. My pleasure.